Members, we're still one person shy of a quorum at this particular point, but I'm going to call up Representative Kalin and House File 680 to kind of start talking about a little bit of the bill. I do want to explain what's going to happen. If in the excitement of the early days when we started, if anyone remembered, I imposed a 24-hour rule, and this amendment did not get here yesterday. It got here this morning, so this bill will be laid over until Tuesday. But hopefully, what we can do is get all the discussion done, bring it up Tuesday because we have some things scheduled on Tuesday, and. If you've got questions about the amendment that we don't get to today, you'll have a couple of days to talk with the author of the bill, and we will vote it out of here very quickly on Tuesday. I don't think once on Tuesday the quorum is here, it will take more than a minute to get it out of here. And just understand that the chair is a bit crabby today because I have a cold. So if I am rude, you know, too bad. Representative Pepin?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was what I was going to ask you about, the process. Now, in committee yesterday, Representative Kalin, you sent it to Finance, and I know Finance hasn't met. And then somewhere in between the process, I believe it went to another committee. And I'm just really having a hard time understanding the process. So if it's laid over until Tuesday here, then if you could explain the path. And I'm having a hard time, especially with the Finance stop and the fact that it never stopped in Finance, even though that's what it was referred to. So maybe the bill isn't alive now. I'm not sure. I'm not exactly sure where it's at. So if you could clarify before you get started, that would be really helpful.
If I might step in here. It was referred down from, referred to Finance and then referred down to higher ed and to this particular committee from Finance, if I remember right, if I'm understanding it correctly. So the bill is alive, fortunately. Decent bill, got some good principles to it. We only get to discuss a couple of them in this particular committee. I think it is, what sections? 7 and 8 are the preview of this particular committee. Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm sort of understanding. When you say it was sent out of Finance, what is exactly, does that mean the Chair of Finance sent it here, or, because we haven't met, we didn't meet in Finance. Yesterday in committee it was sent to Finance, right. And Finance hasn't met since then. And so when you say it's moved from Finance, I'm just having a hard time understanding the process. Does that mean Chair Carlson?
Representative Pepin, I am going to call on staff to explain this. It is always fun to call on staff and make her talk in at committee. Ms. Dornfield?
Mr. Chair and Representative Pepin, the full Finance Committee refers bills via memo down to the various divisions. The full Finance Committee only hears bills when they have been passed out of all of the divisions and are headed back to the floor. And so when the bill was passed out of State Government Finance yesterday, Chair Carlson referred the bill by memo to the Higher Ed and Workforce Development Division, and Representative Rukavina then referred by memo the bill to this division. When we take action, we'll be passing it back to Representative Rukavina's division. He will then need to take action to pass it back to Finance. And then I believe we'll make a couple more stops in Finance Division before the full Finance Committee hears the bill to send it on to the floor.
Okay.
Good to have smart people.
You must have a master's degree to figure that whole process out.
Representative Kalin, what I'm going to ask of you is just a very brief 1 minute overview of the bill and then a 5 minute explanation or however long you think it needs to. Well, actually, I think we have an amendment. We should probably put the amendment on first, give you a minute or two to explain the bill as an overview, and then in particular give us your thoughts on the amendment and the two sections that pertain to this particular committee.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if you would wish to entertain a motion to consider the bill before the committee, I would make that motion.
It's good we finally have a quorum. Good idea, Representative Hilty. Representative Hilty. Oh, The committee is now in session, and we have a motion to move the bill by Representative Hilty. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Who's bringing the amendment forward? It doesn't say on here who the amendment is brought forward by.
It's an office amendment that will be moved by Representative Hilty.
Oh, okay.
Representative Hilty, would you care to entertain a motion? Would you move...
Mr. Chair, I would move adoption of the H06-80A3 amendment.
All those in favor of adopting the A3 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. So moved.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is the bill in the order at this present time that you are asking it to be in?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Especially pertaining to the two sections that are within the jurisdiction of this committee. Mr. Chair and members, House File 680 is a bill establishing a framework to put the stimulus dollars, now law, to work here in Minnesota as quickly as possible, where we can put Minnesotans back to work. And that is in energy efficiency. It is only an energy efficiency provision. There are not other energy provisions nor other stimulus-related provisions in the bill. The framework is so that is presented so we can maximize the value and return on investment we get for those dollars. You probably have heard the term shovel-ready more often than you would like to hear in the last 2 months. That term doesn't apply to energy efficiency projects because shovels aren't needed. The opportunities exist today. What's needed are tools, wrenches, gloves to install insulation, hammers to, and nail guns to install replacement energy efficient windows. I'll walk through the bill quickly. Section 1 establishes a revolving loan fund so that the stimulus dollars aren't exhausted, the opportunity doesn't exhaust when the stimulus period ends, that we can return some of the savings and ensure that there's an ongoing work to be done here in Minnesota. Section 2 establishes the principles and criteria for the Office of Energy Security in administering and allocating the funds based on cost effectiveness, geographic distribution. But the primary concern, and it's listed as number one, is to maximize job retention and creation and optimize energy conservation. Section 3 is the low-income residential weatherization program. Briefly, Mr. Chair, there are 400,000 income-eligible Minnesotan households, in Minnesota for low-income heating assistance. We can only serve about 165,000 of them currently. We weatherize fewer than 4,000. The federal dollars will give us an opportunity to weatherize about 25 to 30,000 homes, depending on a couple of the approaches we take. Section 4 and 5 deal with public building renovations. 4 is the local and school districts. 5 is state government buildings. The conversation yesterday in state government finance reiterated that the point we have an opportunity here to return savings through energy savings to the bottom line and help us balance the budget this year by enacting this bill. And that's a critical piece. We have to grow jobs as part of the stimulus dollars, but we here in the legislature have to balance the budget. This bill helps us do the energy savings and achieve those savings very quickly. Section 6 is a provision I think that is critical for Minnesota families, both in the Northwest region and then those of us on the east side of the metro, and that is the window replacement add-on to the weatherization, low-income weatherization program. Currently, the capital investment required to replace windows is not allowable under the federal weatherization formula, but we know that Anderson Windows has laid off hundreds, nearly 1,000 employees over the last couple of months. This provision will use state energy program and energy efficiency conservation block grant dollars to match the weatherization dollars and enable us, when we're in a home, to do as much as we possibly can and not have to come back a second time. It's a really efficient measure, and it has great multiplying effects in Minnesota's economy. Section 7 and 8 are the purview of this committee, and I'll speak to the bill as amended by the A3 amendment. Mr. Chair and members, there are a couple of bottlenecks in deploying resources as quickly as we can. And I think that's a key goal of this bill, is to remove those bottlenecks. If we're going to weatherize 6 or 7 times more homes over the next year and a half in Minnesota, we need to have home energy auditors doing the initial assessment. Currently, we have 60 to 70 home energy auditors employed by the community action agencies or contracted by the community action agencies that do low-income weatherization in Minnesota. We will need upwards of 350 to 400 more. That's a clear bottleneck in putting Minnesotans to work. What I have heard from the community action partnerships is that within 28 days of passage of this bill, they can hire on more workers. But if we don't have the home energy auditors that can do that assessment, that's a clear bottleneck that will delay unemployment checks being replaced by paychecks. We also have a need to make sure that the work that we do in the public buildings isn't just a capital investment, and there's not follow-up by electricians, pipe fitters, and energy managers. And that follow-up often actually happens by what my generation knew as janitors, but are really facilities managers and facilities employees in our public schools and in our state government buildings that operate the building. It's a short training currently offered by Rochester Tech, and I believe it's a 6-week training. I'm hoping that that someone can clarify that for the committee. But that training ensures that the systems are operating as designed and intended. We've heard of data showing a 23% energy savings increase after one employee in one campus in northern Minnesota went through the building operator certification program. That's a pretty great return on investment. The same is true for certified energy managers. Architecture and engineering fields in Minnesota have an unemployment rate approaching 35% now. We know that our electricians are here for IBW Day on the Hill. They have a similar unemployment rate. We can put them to work, no doubt, the electricians replacing lighting in our institutions, which has the fastest return on investment. But in terms of ensuring that the recommissioning, the next step in very exhaustive engineering work, that happens, we need more architects and engineers to have the certified energy manager training to go in and do that energy recommissioning work. And I think, Mr. Chair, there's a basic principle in the training provisions as we've adopted under the amendment. And that principle is that we should not be creating new mechanisms when the current program delivery models are out there. For instance, our privately funded skilled trades unions are doing a lot of work on their own, training and expectation of the work ahead. It's really important that we maximize the dollars that we have and use them where we need them and not recreate the wheel and replace existing programs for several reasons. One is a fiscal perspective. The other, of course, is the time that it would take to develop those new programs and new channels. Section 8 requires a fairly high level of accountability and transparency to reports beginning in May and for 3 months roughly thereafter of at least nine factors, reporting to the legislature and to the public on the success of these programs. The specific job project funded, the number of jobs retained or created, the average wage of the jobs created or retained, the total calculated and actual energy savings, the funds left, as well as the non-stimulus funding leveraged by the stimulus fund. Mr. Chair, I actually see a reference there that we could clean up today or actually do when it returns to the Energy Committee. I'd actually prefer to wait, Mr. Chair, but the revolving loan fund that was initially described as an energy savings endowment, we want to know how much money exists in that revolving loan fund so that we're accruing an opportunity to continue work beyond the 2010 year of the stimulus. We especially want to know the training courses provided, who's paid for them, where they're happening, and the total number enrolled. I think that's a critical piece for this committee as we look to see the gaps or strengths of the training programs. And we also want to know the compliance with existing federal and state wage and outreach requirements. That, Mr. Chair, is the bill with a special focus on the work before your committee. And with that, stand for questions.
Representative Kalin, thank you. I will take you up on your suggestion of with the finance piece that you spoke to. This is a policy committee, it's not a finance committee, so you can either do it, and I think you have to go to the higher ed workforce finance division, or you have to, and you have to go back to finance, energy finance, so you can do it in either of those two.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
As long as the chair of that, those particular committees want to hear it. thank you. Members, are there some questions? I'll start with one here. On page one, line 20 to 22, you talk about outreach to the unemployed, and you know, and I'm just wondering, who's doing that outreach to get these people hired? Is this the Office of Energy Security, DEED, Higher Ed, CAPED, Community Action Agencies? Have you already got a plan for that?
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the question. One of the real assets and strengths of bringing this bill forward is it has activated a lot of the, and even further energized a lot of the planning that's happening around the state. A lot of the conversations, my phone has been ringing off the hook. And I'm doing my best to get back to every single person that is interested and engaged in helping put people to work as quickly as they can. I know that Office of Energy Security, DEED, and Higher Ed are currently engaged in those conversations, partly as a result of their work on the Clean Jobs Task Force as well. Formally, the joint plan will be the responsibility of OES, DEED, and Higher Ed. But I know that that informally there are a lot of partnerships that currently exist. You asked about the community action agencies. I've been meeting with them regularly, and I believe someone is here from community action that can answer questions as needed. But they do hire from their communities generally, and the communities that they serve all over the state. So that's one key way that we can ensure that there is geographic balance all over the state with these funds.
Representative Gottwell, did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I have several of them, but I may defer to some of my other colleagues to ask additional questions. Representative, Mr. Chair, Representative Kalin, as I looked at this bill, I thought to myself, how much federal money, federal deficit spending money, is coming to Minnesota in this package that's earmarked for this? And am I understanding this correctly, we're setting aside what is basically an endowment that's targeted specifically for energy improvements around the state?
As Representative Kalin, and let me just give you a heads up, the endowment seems to be a fiscal part, and I don't think that's in Section 7 or 8, so I will let Representative Kalin answer the particular question, but... to ask some of your colleagues, our colleagues from last year, how I tend to cut people off when they're wandering too far.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just point out that we're talking about how money is going to be spent. That's what this bill is all about, and that's a policy issue as well as a fiscal issue.
Mr. Chair, Representative Gottwald, there are three sources of funding through existing grant programs. There is no earmark in related to these provisions. I don't believe there's an earmark in the larger bill. There's about $135 million of new low-income residential weatherization dollars on top of the $20 million existing. There is roughly $54.5 or $55 million, depending on final calculations from the Department of Energy, for the state energy program. It is not my intention, nor do I think Chair Hilty would let me approach anything close to exhausting that $55 million for the purposes of this bill. And there's I believe it's $5.7 million from the Energy Efficiency Conservation Block Grant. If that's okay, I'll call it the EECBG dollars. there is, for the purview of this committee, there is training dollars allocated within the weatherization formula, roughly about 10%.
Representative Dowell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, how many jobs are we going to create with this? We've heard a lot of talk about jobs, but do we know if we're going to do all of this, what are we going to end up with?
Representative
Gottwald, I'm pretty conservative when it comes to data and projections. I like to have birds in the hand rather than out in the field. I know that conservative, very conservative estimates on the public building side have 200 electricians out working very quickly within a short time period, within a couple of months at the latest. Upwards of 175 engineers out doing recommissioning in public buildings. I know that Anderson Windows rarely gets excited while legislature is in session, and I've heard both from the CEO as well as from advocates that that they're talking about being able to bring back hundreds of the laid off workers from the window replacement. I have heard numbers in the hundreds, if not thousands, and when it comes to the low income weatherization program. Home energy auditors, I think the calculation of, you know, 300, 350, 400. We are talking probably in the thousands within 90 to 180 days total. I do know within 28 days of passing this bill, we can have more laborers and carpenters and sheet metal workers out doing weatherization. Within about 45 to 60 days, we can have electricians and engineers in our public buildings.
That's all for now.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Representative Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kalin, I'm gathering that in past committees you've had people from the Department of Employee, from DEED, and from the, well, I guess you're going to higher ed, and I take it you will be going to energy, and you're probably having people from Energy Commission, or Energy Security Office, coming to testify. And I just wonder if you have any of these people that are included in your bill to testify today. Also, on line 1.25, what's an OIC? Opportunities Industrialization Centers?
Mr. Chair and Representative Anderson, I'm just doing a quick scan of the room to see if any of our OIC representatives are here. Opportunities Industrialization Centers, there are, I believe, five of them around the state, and I wonder if staff might even be able to, or Mr. Chair might be able to explain more. I know that there's a couple, I think there's four in the metro area and then one in north central Minnesota, and they are currently train dozens of workers at a time, and I know that they've been really engaged in getting ready for this work, and we'll do some of that recruiting that the chair asked about.
Does that answer your question, or would you like further explanation of the OICs?
No. I would like to have the first question answered about regarding these different departments coming.
Oh, we got them all. We got them
all. Are they here?
Just about everybody's been called and asked to be here. So if you've got someone you want to talk to, you request, and I'll ask them to come on down if you got a question for them.
The Office of Energy Security?
They've been told to be here. Are they here?
Director Bobon is here.
And identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Bill Glahn. I am the Director of the Office of Energy Security and a Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Commerce.
Hey, could you come up with a scarier name, Energy Security? Representative Anderson, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Glahn, this says in here, Section 8, that you shall report the progress of these funds that are going to be sent to you, or you're going to be having oversight, and you're going to send a report back to us, the Energy Finance, by May 1st. Do you know the amount of funds that you're going to be looking at, and will you be able to do that report within the next 3 months, 2 months?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'll answer your second question first. Yes, we'll send a report.
And to the first part of the question, we're really not a finance committee, so as much as you can keep it to the policy, I think you're probably better off.
Okay, I will try to thread that needle. But to elaborate on the second question, we'll provide whatever reports you require of us. It's just how much we'll have to report at that stage of the process is an unknown. I think you got a flavor from Representative Kalin, just the amount of work involved in getting this money out on the street, as it were. You know, with auditors need to be hired, auditors need to be trained, they need to be hired, houses need to be identified, crews assembled and mobilized and sent out based on the reports from the auditors, etc. But to answer your first question, I'll try to keep it policy related. There are roughly four areas that are included in the federal stimulus bill that touch on the areas involved in Representative Kalin's bill, the largest being the low-income weatherization piece. And different numbers have floated around about I'm trying to thread the needle, Mr. Chair. Different numbers have floated around about how many dollars would be available for these various categories. So when there's any doubt, we've taken the position at the OES to quote the lower dollar number. That being, if the formulas turn out to be more favorable, then we'll have a happy we'll have happy news to report, rather than saying. Because there's a $170 million number that's floated around for home weatherization, but we've been using a $120 million number. And again, it depends on the formulas. There's some formulas that are more favorable to southern tier states than to northern tier states, and we've erred on the side of being more conservative, and we're hoping that we will have more funds available. But regardless of whether it's 120 or 170 or something in between, it's something on the order of 10 times the funds that we've had for this function in recent years. So it's quite a mobilization that we're having to do in the next 18 to 24 months. Representative Kalin mentioned another, again, on the policy, it's the State Energy Office funds, and approximately $55 million of that. And the State Energy Office has done this weatherization work, so there might be more funds from that pot of money, if you will, that would come into the weatherization part of it. Also, there's a block grant, which Representative Kalin mentioned as well. That's in the neighborhood of $5 to $6 million. Again, I won't get into the details of that, but because it is a finance issue and it's a complicated funding formula about how much will go to large cities and large counties, how much will go flow through our office to smaller cities and counties, and then some of it retained by our office. And those funds, the block grants and the state energy offices, were going to be where the public building funds come from, and for state and local and county level retrofitting, et cetera, which Representative Kalin mentioned. Finally, there will be rebate monies for smart appliances. We think about $5 million will flow through our office, intended for appliance rebates to let consumers purchase Energy Star appliances, and we're hoping to use that to supplement some of the existing utility incentives that are out there that would enable more. And again, as we're doing these weatherizations, perhaps some appliance turnover will be part of that as well. So, as briefly as I could, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. I have one kind of question with all this money coming in, and it really is it's not really Section 7 or 8. Do you have an idea how many more auditors you're going to be hiring? If no is an answer you can give, because you might not have gotten to that particular thought process yet.
Mr. Chair, the short answer is no, and the longer answer is something in the hundreds.
Somewhere in between there.
Representative Anderson, the follow-up?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Glahn, it looks like you're the CEO or the guy in charge here, since you're going to have to coordinate with the Department of Employment, Economic Development, Higher Ed, and the Department of Education. Looks like you're the go-to man here. Do you know how many programs you're looking at, approximately, that you're going to have to make this work?
Mr. Chair, Representative, the weatherization program, I mean, it already exists. It's one program, but again, everything is nuanced, but the utilities are involved. They have programs, and we already employ the CAP agencies and other nonprofit entities to deliver these services. So, I'm not quite sure I'm exactly responsive to your question, but the infrastructure is already in place to deliver these services to the constituents that they're intended to serve. What is missing is the scale. We believe that the existing infrastructure is scalable, but you know, the proof is in the doing, and as we go through this process, we'll see how quickly we can get new auditors trained. It's actually the CAP agencies and the nonprofits and the utilities hire the auditors and hire these crews, and they have contracts with us, and we provide them funds through, and it had been Department of Energy funds chiefly that we were providing for this, as well as some Federal Housing Department funds. I hope that got to your question.
Mr. Chair, talks about development of a system to track this, the way you do things. Have you developed that system or are in the process of doing that?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we are in the process of doing that. You know, we did have some advance warning that this was coming, and we have relationships with some folks who have done other software type projects for us and tracking type projects for us to try to do something more automated rather than having somebody with a spreadsheet and typing all these numbers in. So we are talking to our vendors about that, and we anticipate that there will be requirements from the Department of Energy to track some of the many of the same measures that are included in Representative Kalin's bill. We have need for our own our own internal needs to track a lot of these measures. So we are tracking many of these items already through our existing program. We weatherize something around 3,800 to 4,000 homes a year, and we do keep track of, and then on the other side with the grants and the loans, who gets the money and what purpose it's for. It's just that we haven't done it on this scale before. So we're looking to work with our existing vendors to see if we can get software-based tracking systems to enable us to track additional items such as jobs created and wage levels, and also in the numbers that we're going to, we hope, be providing services under this stuff.
Representative Kalin, you had something to add?
Yeah, just briefly, Mr. Chair, and Representative Anderson, in the State Government Finance Committee, we've had, and I think Representative Pepin can attest to this as well, a very rigorous discussion over the course of January and early February about internal controls across state agencies and auditing and the ability to manage funds. The Department of Commerce was singled out by several folks that have testified before the committee as exemplary in tracking funds, I think the term that was used is they're extremely buttoned up. So I hope we can have great confidence that they're already tracking the dollars they do spend and will continue to do so extremely well.
Thank you. Representative Anderson, I'm going to move on to Representative Beard to make sure that we're getting a longer list here, so I want to make sure everyone gets a chance to ask at least one or two questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm going to ask a definition of term question first, Representative Kalin, although I'd love to spend time with Mr. Glenn talking about the process.
He'll come to your office.
He will. But it may be beneficial for all of the members to hear all of the discussion. That's why we're here. Representative Kalin, energy auditors I'm familiar with, I had one to my home from the gas company who did a pretty marvelous job of pointing things out. Building operators, I think I understand. What is your definition of an energy manager, just so we're all clear here? That sounds like a new term that's kind of popped up here in this bill.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, an energy manager is a certification program. I think that you can take the test. It's administered, I believe, online, but you can take the test provided you meet certain prerequisites, professional degree with a certain amount of experience, an undergraduate degree with even more experience, and no degree with, I think, 10 years of experience in architecture, engineering fields, then you have to take a rigorous exam, of which I think that there are 11 sections, and you have to pass 8. And I had a printer problem. I was hoping to print out that information for this committee. I will be sure to email it to Ms. Dornfeld, and we'll get it out to the committee. But it is a recognized training or a sort of continuing education curriculum. For instance, I do not have my master's in architecture. I have 2 years of architecture schooling and worked for about three-quarters time to half-time for a little over 2 years for a home builder doing design and other work. I would not be eligible to take the test because I don't meet the prerequisites. If I did have my Master of Architecture, I could, but I'd have to have more experience to be able to become a certified energy manager.
Senator Beard, exactly who, Mr. Chair, would these people work for, particularly as it relates to this stimulus package? How do they fit into the picture here?
Mr. Chair and Representative Beard, I think we have to work with the utilities. As you know, the utilities run the Conservation Improvement Program, and they have to, as a result of the 2007 Next Generation Energy Act, have nameplated savings that are a direct result of their actions. We have explicitly included them in the tax-exempt lease purchase financing mechanism in Sections 4 and 5 of part of the public building retrofitting, so we're stretching the dollars as far as we can, and the building owners have skin in the game, et cetera. In that framework, there is a specific nod to work directly with conservation improvement programs that utilities run. My sense is it would be the utilities that would be contracting with either full-scale contractors that hire the certified energy manager or managers of direct self-employed energy managers that would then go into these public buildings and do the retrofit or do the recommissioning work.
Which, Mr. Chair, leads me to my final question, just so we're all clear and working with the same definition and terms. I have an idea of what energy recommissioning means, but could you just be clear, explain what energy recommissioning is to all of us, as it's meant in this bill or what we're referring to here?
Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to call on someone from the Minnesota Center for Energy and the Environment that has done a lot of work.
While he's coming down, could you tell me who certifies the test, by the way?
Who certifies the test?
Yeah.
I can make sure that that's included in the information I get to you.
He doesn't know, but that will work for the guidance. Please do include that. And could you identify yourself for the record?
Chen. I'm a Director of Innovative Technologies at the Center for Energy and Environment.
Thank you.
With regard to your question about building recommissioning, it's a process in which engineers enter a building to look for opportunities for energy savings, either with the shell, the building envelope, or with the mechanical system, the boilers, the ventilation. So they'll go through, do detailed engineering studies, looking at the existing structure and how the building is the equipment as well as operation and controls, and come up with strategies to optimize the energy savings of the building. So that's what the building recommissioning process would be.
It's that simple, Mr. Chair. It's a new buzzword, and it's been floating around lately. I just want everybody to know it's another way of saying we're going to retrofit buildings to do it the most economical and efficient way possible. Kind of what we've been doing for years. So.
Representative Beard, you've always asked good questions in this committee.
That didn't help me.
You had a question?
I'll pass, Mr. Chair.
All right. Reverend Hall?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to ask some questions of somebody from the Community Action Program.
Well, why don't we have them come on down? I know this person. Nice to see you, Valerie. Please identify. You know the drill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Gilson, and I represent the Minnesota Community Action Association. And I will certainly try my best to answer your questions, Representative Hawes, and if I can't, I will get the answers to you.
I'll try to make them easy. How many community action programs are there in the state, and do you cover the entire state?
We cover the entire state, and I believe the number of community action programs is 28.
Most of the programs that we're talking about here are familiar to your organizations, or just a set of them? If it's just a set of them, what are they?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Of the discussions that are taking place here, some of these programs are pretty already integrated into the community action program. You want to identify, though it's just briefly, a 3x5 card?
Yes. Mr. Chair and Representative Haas, community action agencies provide weatherization assistance to member individuals in their community, and they also participate in the low-income energy assistance program.
Mr. Chair, follow-up. Thank you. You have contracts federal and state? If you have contracts federal and state, then you have audits every year?
I believe so, but I have to verify that.
You do. Follow-up. Is anybody flunking those audits? Anybody got bad numbers in those audits?
I will have to get back with you. I have to apologize. The executive director of the association is currently in another committee hearing, so I will...
Mr. Chair, I testify. The reason I asked is because I don't think anybody has that number.
I was just going to say, could you answer your own question?
Yes, I can.
Would you please?
And one of the reasons I asked that question is I think after you have perfect audits for 3 or 4 years, you should have a lower audit on the fifth year. You shouldn't have to expend $20,000 every year if you have a report card. When you get an F, you ought to be fired, and if you get a C, you ought to help with improvement, just like everything else. But I think that's a waste of dollars. Do you have waiting lists for these programs?
Yes.
Yes. Do you have employees that are not working right now because you don't have money to work them? The answer is yes.
Yes.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
You know, Mr. Chair, can I claim that he's leading the witness? Or?
leading the witness. I could have given her the answer.
And she's always been very well prepared and good with the answers.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to, you know, as Mr. Representative Beard said, I think everybody should be aware how professional the community action programs are. Ours, the only flaw I can see in TRICAP, our area, is it should be called QuadCAP because there's more than three counties.
Ms. Dolson, if I might ask, how long does it take to train your weatherization people before they can, from the time they get hired to the time they're out stuffing insulation or caulking or whatever it is that they do? Do you know that, or could you get that to us?
I can get that to you. I do know in conversations that we've had with Representative Kalin yesterday, at least with the Community Action Agency in his community, they said that the turnaround time from their ability to be able to implement the program once the funds were available would be about approximately 30 to 45 days. That particular Community Action Agency has been in the process of currently hiring some folks, and they think that they would be able to do it in as quickly as possible. But again, that's just one Community Action Agency. And if I could also add, Mr. Chair, there are some reporting requirements in this bill, and Community Action Agencies are readily available and easily available for them to provide that accountability information.
That's what the author has told me, that they would be able to, then we give those kind of numbers. So that's pretty impressive. I think Representative Winkler, did you have any more questions?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Tess.
Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to pick up on one of the recurring themes that you brought up in this committee, which is the profusion of job training programs that we have in the state across all jurisdictions. And I guess the question for Representative Kalin is, to your amendment, line 1.8, it says that the various departments are supposed to allocate stimulus funds to training programs. Do you know the extent of those existing training programs, where we can channel money into things that are already there on a temporary basis versus having to create new ones, or are there other things we sort of do that are like this and maybe we should change and get rid of? And maybe Dee could also speak to that point.
Mr. Chair,
I think your witness looks like he wants to
I was just going to ask the Representative Winkler if he'd rather Office of Energy Security answer that question.
And actually, Mr. Chair, I think Deed would be a...
Deed is in the queue.
Mr. Chair, Representative, because it's the Workforce Development Committee, I anticipated there'd be questions on training. And yes, Deed has a number of programs of their own and their own focus, and I'm sure if somebody were here from Deed, they could elaborate much more than I could on their activities. But as far as training that the Office of Energy Security engages in, it's actually quite a bit. We have
a program through the Dunwoody Institute on otter training, and it's been underway since the late fall, where we've been producing additional otters for residential properties. We are in the planning stages of having a commercial otter program, and we've been told by a number of folks in the agricultural sector that there is a shortage of otters who are trained to look at agricultural operations, farm operations. So that's something that we're also looking into. It's not as far developed as our existing Dunwoody program or our plan for commercial otters. We're doing also in the planning stages for contractor training in HVAC, heating, ventilation, air conditioning, also insulation and air sealing. So those are some planning, some training programs in the planning stages. We also have quite a bit of training on renewable energy, where we're training solar installation folks. We've done four of these sessions, about 30 to 40 people in each session. We had a wind installer training session where we're training people to install wind turbines. We had one of those already. We have more scheduled. We've had workshops to help wind developers learn how they can get involved in the small wind project development business. We were oversubscribed on that, had people coming from out of state. We have another workshop we're working on in that area in the April time frame. In the fall, we're also going to do another one of our hands-on wind installation workshops, teaching people how to do wind installation. So we have quite a bit going on in the energy efficiency sector and the renewable, small-scale renewable energy sector as well.
Representative Winkler, Mr. Chair, then I guess the testifier, it kind of actually increases my, I wouldn't say concern, but the strength of my question, which is you're doing a number of new programs through your office. How well is that coordinated with MNSCU or DEED or local communities, counties, and all the other people who are doing job training? Because I think that the issue that you haven't had the benefit of testimony in previous committee hearings, but an issue that we're having to deal with is just that there's so much of this going on, and not all of it is subject to the strict accountability measures that Representative Kalin has. And so I'm concerned about a lack of coordination, and I wonder if you could speak to that from your agency's point of view.
And just to add to Representative Winkler's comments, we have 40 or better workforce training spread across 7 different departments, and now it looks like we're going to have 50 spread across 7 different departments. And your answer.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think it's a legitimate concern. I would say, at least from the standpoint of our office, we're in the early stages of doing that coordination effort. I understand the desire not to duplicate or reinvent the wheel. There's a lot of this is already being done, and which I think is a good thing, that there's a lot of folks who are interested in energy efficiency, interested in renewable energy, taking the initiative to do their own training efforts and to bring people into this sector, and don't want to discourage that, but also we have had discussions with DEED, actually we work quite closely with DEED, and we have had discussions with the energy folks and the MNSCU folks, but I wouldn't say they're as advanced as our work with DEED, and certainly more coordination in that effort would be a good thing, and we look forward to having a more substantial report to you at this upcoming report date.
I would, as a word of advice, at some point or another, try to figure out how to lead all of these over to DEED, because that's where the workforce is supposed to be trained. But as I continue to try to get more and more of the workforce underneath DEED, because it's easier for funding and oversight. So. But this seems to be something that needs to get done relatively quickly, and I don't want to muck up this particular process, so it's only one time. I think...
Mr. Chair, can I just follow up quickly? And I don't want to suggest that this is a problem of agencies. It's often a problem of the legislature being undisciplined in what we look at and what we create. hard as that is to imagine. I just wonder if, Representative Kalin, you might be willing to look at, as this bill moves forward, adding language to the task DEED with the job of identifying programs that actually are already doing this or eliminating ones that are not effective. I'm not asking for an amendment to your current amendment. We're going to have this until Tuesday, but if if there is maybe some room to put the onus on Deed to do the coordinating on programs to make sure that we're using the money effectively based on what we have.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, that I absolutely want to make sure that I mean, I appreciate the concern. It's actually been a real burden or hurdle, excuse me, to green jobs development from a grant and loan perspective as well. They're all over agencies, and I think to be able to coordinate much better is going to be really critical. I will work with all the respective agencies that we've named in the bill and others to make sure that we are maximizing the use of the stimulus funds to do this training, and that we're using the appropriate channel that doesn't, you know, create more hurdles of sending money all over the place. You know, so I we explicitly, with the work of the chair in the amendment, strengthens that, not OES in consultation with these, but actual joint plan, which I think is one strong step towards that. And I'd just like to continue the conversation and see how we can achieve that goal.
We have about a half an hour and four more on the list, and so I'm just giving people a heads up. We will lay the bill over at about 5 minutes still. So, Representative Pepin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have perhaps a couple questions for Mr. Glenn.
Glad I brought everybody else down today.
And that may be it. And then maybe just a couple technical questions for Representative Kalin, if you don't mind. For you, Mr. Glenn, I did some emailing with Representative Kalin last night trying to find additional information on the stimulus package, and I did a lot of web searching trying to find exactly how much the appropriation was for Minnesota, and you talked about that a little bit. I think you said $120 million for weatherization, $120 to $170, $5 or $6 million for block grants, $5 million for appliance repairs. I can't remember if there's one other one, too.
Well, and the $55 million for the State Energy Office.
Okay. So those are four specific blocks of the nine blocks that I found on the website of where energy money is going. And I'm wondering if there, as far as you know, if there are any stipulations for any of these things, and if we're going to be also receiving any funds from the other five areas that are not addressed in Representative Kalin's bill, if you have any additional information about that, because I couldn't find it.
Mr. Chair, Representative, to answer your second question first, we may well. Those are just the ones that we know or have a very high degree of confidence are going to flow through our agency. Because we have the State Energy Office and the State Office of Energy Assistance and a lot of these other programs that are federally funded, it would make sense at some level for some of these other programs to funnel money through our office, because we have the grant making and the tracking capability, et cetera. So there, I don't have something I can share with members, but I do have a list of stuff where there's housing retrofits, and there's research monies, monies for vehicle-related programs, which we do a little bit of through our office.
So I'm sure Representative Hilty and his committee will love to hear about all the finance stuff.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I think I do you have other questions that pertain more to the workforce?
Yeah, I'm trying to.
That seems to kind of go into the finance, and I don't want to.
Yeah,
I get my hand slapped every time I go into a finance committee when I do stuff in this committee, so I'm getting tired of getting slapped.
No, I appreciate that. Actually, this is the first chance I've had in committee to speak with Mr. Glenn, and I think it's really helpful to kind of get a sense. I guess what I'm trying to get at overall is, you mentioned that there might be, you know, more things that we get, and I'm wondering, I would, since you're on, this is probably more of a policy question, since there may be other money coming in and we're not really sure what the total dollar amount is, I'm wondering if this bill is ready for prime time. Looking at this bill, there are an awful lot of stipulations in this bill, and I'm not sure how they match with any federal stipulations, because I wasn't able to find them. I spent a considerable amount of time, and I couldn't find any of that listed. So I'm wondering, my question to you, I guess, is this your bill? Do you think it's ready to go, ready to hit the floor, vote on, or would it make more sense to wait a little bit, perhaps see exactly what the totals are, to find out if we're getting any other money in any of these other five block areas, and, you know, maybe just slow down the process a little bit?
Mr. Chair, Representative, since you directed the question to me, I know Representative Kalin is anxious to jump in. We've been working with Representative Kalin and his office to try to shape this bill into something that's workable. We've made, I think, a lot of progress. If you look at the very first version that was introduced, we believe a lot more progress needs to be made, and we may disagree on exactly where those areas are that need more progress than others. But it's a moving target. And even though the bill has already been signed, it's 1,000 pages, almost 1,100 pages, and a lot of we have received to date, and I know it's only, it hasn't been 24 hours yet, but we've received no guidance yet from the Department of Energy on what formulas they're going to use.
Three summaries that we have yet?
And it's one of those things I was using yesterday, the onion analogy. You know, you peel away another layer, and back to your original question about what stipulations there are stipulations. There are things that we've heard about that the governor has to certify this, or we have to certify that. And so those are things that we're going to be looking at in the next hours, days, and weeks. So to many of the typical strings, such as state matching requirements, have not been included with this, but there are other stipulations and other conditions, and some of those may cause, may trip us up, and others might not. So we're still discovering those as we, A, plow through the 1,100 pages, and B, start to get guidance from the various parts of the Department of Energy. Now, I think you get the flavor for the work we're struggling with $200 million and trying to spend that in a responsible manner in 2 years or so, but the Department of Energy has a $40 billion project, $40 billion challenge from the stimulus bill, and their deadlines are all before we even get started. So it's a lot of work and a very short time frame.
Mr. Chair, to this point, Mr. Representative Hilton.
Thank you. Representative Pepin, this bill was heard in the Energy Finance and Policy Division on Monday, and I felt that it was appropriate to kind of give the bill an introduction and to move it through the various policy discussions. It was my intention, which it was clear to all of the members of the committee, that the final stop before this bill goes to the Finance Committee and hopefully to the floor is back to my committee to fill in these numbers when we know what they are and to deal with any restraints or stipulations that we have to deal with at that time. But if we try to do that first, you know, we are wasting a lot of time, I think. I think that the process that the bill is going through now is appropriate. All of these questions will be dealt with in my committee when we have enough details that we actually know what we're talking about.
And thank you, Representative Schulte. My kind of the way I looked at this is that they were trying to get the policy done before they got to the finance and go back to the Finance Committee to plug numbers in. Is that the right way? I'm not so sure, but that's the way it's going to be. Representative Tupman, did you have a couple other questions? And if you could be quick, because I want to actually get some workforce stuff in from Minsky eventually. So.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a lot of questions. I asked several yesterday, and I think I'll have more. But I will limit mine to two, and one of them specifically on Section 7.
There you go.
Just kind of overall, I think there's some flaws in the writing of the bill, and I'm working from the version I had from yesterday, so forgive me if my numbering is incorrect. But specifically on page 2, there's a lot of references such as Section 2, Federal Stimulus Funding, General Principles, and Subdivision 2, Stimulus Fund Allocation and Use Principles, Federal law and regulation, and I don't see any statutory references. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, when we talk about general principles and we put this, if we're going to move this forward and put this in, you know, pass this bill, I think we need to be more specific about what principles are. Mm-hmm. Another example is in Subdivision 4 of Section 1, Part B, It says the Office of Energy Security must establish procedures. It doesn't really say where they're going to be posted. And then it talks about criteria. I don't know if that's rules or...
Mr. Chair. I have a couple of specific questions to Section 7. And I realize, Representative Pepin, I have a lot of questions about this bill as well, but I'm just wondering if we'll be able to just kind of concentrate on this part of it, please.
I was just going to bring up, I think you need to get back to Section 7 or 8 because you're all over, and again, if you could get done here in a couple of minutes.
Well, maybe I'll just do that as a comment then, because I think that that part needs to be tightened up as far as referenced in statute and whatnot before we pass anything. My question specifically on Section 7 is, I'm looking from the amendment here from 1.19 on. Reading that language, we're going to target communities experiencing high rates of unemployment, including but not limited to low-income rural tribal communities, individuals in construction trades, and then again in 3 it talks about tribal colleges and tribal communities. I'm just trying to understand what that is all about, because when I read this, to me it's boxing people out. You're saying we're going to target these groups. I'm not really sure why we'd target tribal communities or tribal colleges as opposed to other colleges. I'm not really sure why we would need that in at all.
Do you have an answer to that?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pepin.
Not limited to?
I urge you. What's that?
Not limited to?
Yes. And I was also going to point out the verbs. Recruit under item 2 and under item 3, ensure that the full capacity of current training providers is utilized. We don't want to be replacing existing channels that are all over the state that do this work.
Representative Pepin, if you've got other questions, I'll put you on after Representative Gottwald, but Representative Poppy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, these are similar to Representative Pepin's, so I wanted to kind of get into this, but it is from Section 1.19 down, and I had the similar questions. Why include any, even though it's but not limited to or whatever? Why couldn't you, under 1.24, ensure that the full capacity of current training providers is utilized, period? Why do you? I just don't know. Why would you include certain things?
Representative Kaler. Mr. Chair and Representative Poppy, it's a question that, or it's an issue that I struggle with a lot. What I have learned from my limited experience out in the design field is often when items are not named, they're not considered. And it's been clear that these channels are channels that are ready to go. Mm-hmm. Ready to put people to work, and I want to make sure that as we're deploying the training to remove those bottlenecks as quickly as we can, to put hundreds of more Minnesotans to work doing this, what is smart energy policy and smart fiscal policy as well, that we make sure that the maximized existing capacity is used as quickly as we possibly can.
Mr. Chair, that seems pretty commonsensical. So it's unfortunate, I would say, that we have to then spell that out, which, and I'm going to make some editorial comments too, I guess, just regarding at the beginning where it talks about the joint plan and joint procedures. I too, like others I think have talked about, to me DEED should be the lead agency talking about workforce development, and so I'm a little concerned about how that it's written that there's going to be a joint plan and joint procedures. I understand that others should be engaged in their best practices so that they're making a good delineation of what those duties would be and how that's going to work, but I'm not quite sure that this is yet the language to have go forward, because if DEED should be the place where training and workforce development happens, then I just need to make that point. And then I think there's another, the training program. I guess I did have another question maybe about the training programs from OES and regarding the when he talked about being in the planning stages, and I'm just wondering about the process. So since we already have current training providers, it sounded to me as though there's also the potential for creating new training programs and new agencies or whatever to deal with this, and I'm just wondering a little bit more about that. So I don't know if you would answer that or the OES.
Briefly, Representative Kaler.
Mr. Chair, I think I can briefly answer that. That the existing, the training elements needed to implement this bill, the energy efficiency portion of the stimulus bill. I believe that the curricula are already out there and being used, and we're training these workers. I think Director Glahn's overview was a good example of the point that you and Representative Winkler and others and the chair are raising about the long-term structural issue of workforce development. But I believe that the existing home energy auditor training and the others listed in the, are up and running today. And so we won't be creating new programs to implement this bill.
And then I think final comment. Yes.
So we'd be ready for the next question. I would like to ask Minsky to actually come down. Yes. And could you finish your question?
And it would pertain to Minsky because I think Mr. Glahn talked about Dunwoody training and then having some other ideas about doing some training. And I was curious about Minsky, and I wanted to know that they are a part of, engaged in this process and able to provide some of that training or be a part of that. So.
Hello, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Gail O'Kane. I'm the Director for Education Industry Partnerships for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. My focus is the area of emerging technologies, and in that capacity, I've primarily worked on the areas of bioscience and renewable energy, but lately, increasingly, in these other areas of green jobs. So I'll do my best to answer your questions about these programs, but in some cases, I may have to go back to the office and get the information that you need.
Did you have a question for them?
Well, my question, and I think it's like yours, is how involved is MNSCU in the training programs or the planning stage of the training programs that the OES has been talking about?
We actually have been working in the green jobs area for a while, but typically what we have been doing is embedding green principles in our existing programs. So there are many examples of that across the state, including at Northland Technical College up in the northwest of the state, and their carpentry and their electrician programs are embedding green principles. So we don't require all of those programs to report to us when they make changes that don't really redefine the programs. So in many cases, that's just happening as a matter of course, as with many other changes that have happened in the industries that have been embedded in those programs. So we're in the process of trying to quantify how much of that is happening. But we do have programs that were specifically designed to address these areas, like Hennepin Technical College, for example, has a building operators program that they work with a national organization that provides national certification to people who work in building operations to do energy auditing on the job themselves. We do have St. Paul College, recently got a Minnesota Job Skills Partnership grant to create a green construction program in partnership with Kraus Anderson. And so they are not just offering training to the Kraus Anderson employees, but also that will be open enrollment programs that are available to others as well. We have Minneapolis Community and Technical Colleges in conversations with the city and with nonprofit organizations that are working in creating training programs for whether it's in the weatherization domain.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate hearing the list of all of the places, but what I'm most concerned about is the coordination with OES, I guess. Mm-hmm. I know that Minsky is doing things and different colleges are doing things, but
right.
I'm just curious about the joint planning that perhaps is going to happen.
Right. And I think we've been working, frankly, most closely with BEAD. We have, I sit on the Green Jobs Task Force, so I have been with colleagues from the Department of Commerce who have already testified here. And so we are trying to coordinate with that as well. We were at a meeting, I was at a meeting earlier this week with the Office of Energy Security that was laying out the federal stimulus package and the training options that were available, and there was a group of about 15 people there at the table working to try to coordinate what everyone is doing. I think we do have some work to do in that area, but I think that is happening as quickly as all this is developing.
Ms. O'Kane, my question is a combination of what Representative Kalin has said earlier about a building operators training course down in Rochester.
Mm-hmm.
And he's indicated to me that it was approximately 6 weeks long. And you speaking to the fact that Minneapolis Community College has a building operator program.
I'm not certain that they have a program. I've been actually in the last couple of days trying to do research on exactly what that partnership is. I do know that they've been in talks to create some training opportunities, but I haven't been able to reach them to find out exactly what that is.
All right. Here's my question then. If it's done in Rochester, can it be done at Northland Community College, Camby, St. Paul Tech College, without a lot of reinventing the wheel when it gets to the next college?
Mm-hmm.
If Rochester's doing a great job,
mm-hmm.
I'm trying to figure out, can you take that syllabus and hand it off to somebody else and say, just teach this, or is that going to be problematic?
I think in many cases we can create those partnerships where that will happen. I think what is also needed is some faculty professional development as well, because it's not enough just to hand off a syllabus and help expect the faculty to be able to deliver it. So we have been talking about not just working across our system, but working with nonprofit organizations that have expertise in energy efficiency to create a system where we just deploy this kind of in a system-wide fashion. So it is very cost-efficient.
Well, Ms. O'Kane, last year, I'm not sure whether it was this committee or the Higher Ed Committee, we tried to pass a bill that required everybody to share, you know, like back to kindergarten. And it didn't go very well. No one really wanted to share, but this would be it seems how we're trying to train people quickly.
Right.
This would be a good place to act like kindergartners and share.
Right. And we certainly support that as a system. In some cases with faculty rights in terms of their curriculum development, those are issues we have to work through, but we are actively trying to work those through. We do have a Department of Labor grant in the renewable energy space where we have $1 million, and that's exactly what we're doing. We're having faculty work together from scratch to develop the curriculum so that it's shared right from the very beginning. So we are in every way trying to advocate doing that.
So I'm going to make this comment, and then I'm going to be done here. But you've got $1 million grant to do a system-wide curriculum when it sounded like you've got programs out there that are actually work to this particular end. So
I was just...
Can you imagine how frustrating that is to legislators if we look at a $7 billion budget shortfall?
I was just using that as an analogy, actually. We are developing new curriculum, so I'm saying we're doing that from scratch in renewable energy. This is a different area. This is energy efficiency, and so we are hoping to do that similarly in a cost-efficient way, and we're exploring different avenues for doing that right now.
Thank you. You had a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I had a whole list of other questions. Out of respect for the committee's time, I think that's part of the issue from my perspective here, is that this bill really raises a lot more questions than answers. One big question I have, and I'll ask in a moment, but my concern about this bill goes to Representative Hilty's comments and the testimony from Mr. Glahn and others that, you know, it's a moving target, and it's kind of a ready-shoot-aim approach to legislation. I understand, I think, what you're trying to do with this bill, Representative Kalin, and I salute it. I really do. We want to get ready. We want to create jobs quickly. We want to use this money. I don't mean to bring up the term money in a policy committee, but that's what we're trying to do.
You wrapped around again.
I'll be careful. I'll be very careful, Mr. Chair. But I am concerned about that aspect of it. There are a whole host of questions about how this functions, the 60%, 30%, about how this functions, the 60%, 30%, maybe some of you noticed that. I'm not quite sure how that works. How does an average Minnesotan actually apply for and get help for their house or their business under this bill as it sits currently? Some of those practical aspects are concerning to me, but the big question that I've been reflecting on that I want to ask of the author and anybody else who can answer it is, what happens if we don't do this? My understanding is the so-called stimulus money is coming here. It is going to be used for specific purposes. We're going to have strings attached to it that we don't understand completely now from the federal government, and yet this bill really hangs it with some more strings on our end of things. So what happens if we don't do this now or we do it later? Is there anybody who can tell me that?
Well, we'll start with Representative Kalin. How's that sound?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gottwalt, one of the things that likely won't happen without the bill is, as we talked about in state government finance yesterday, if the stimulus dollars are used without the mechanisms in House File 680, we likely won't see energy savings show up on the bottom line for 2010 and 11 fiscal years because of the limits of the existing funding framework. So in this case, we can do jobs and contribute at least something, I'm not sure how much yet, to the state budget deficit. Number two is there likely will be states that don't exhaust because they are caught up in delays of their legislature or in ramping up capacity in training and in delivering programs. And the numbers that we heard from Director Glahn, we may actually have an opportunity to get some reallocation of other state funds. I am confident that we can use the funds that we have. The question is, can we be positioned enough to be quickly deploying Minnesotans, which that I know that we can. And I know that we can put Minnesotans to work very quickly with passage of this bill. I think number three is ensuring in session law or in statute, as the case may be, that we solve some of these problems that we're talking about here in terms of the structural sort of, I don't want to call them turf wars, because I've actually seen that they're not turf wars. They're really redeploying resources and building collaborations across what have been historic barriers. And I think that this bill can help further the partnership and the relationships that I know that your committee, Mr. Chair, is working to build and to get a structure that makes sense. Those are a few of the reasons. There are others as well, Representative Gottwalt, but
I was just trying to start a turf war.
Inexhaustible.
Representative Gottwalt, did you have a follow-up?
Just, Mr. Chair and Representative Kalin, your answer, as I'm understanding it, is we do want to direct this money even when we don't quite know how the federal government's going to direct it. The money would flow to us and it would create jobs, but you're trying to be more specific and intentional about it. And I kind of get that, but it feels like the cart before the horse, frankly, and I get concerned that we are putting some limits. I think Representative Hilty had some good questions. Some requirements around this that maybe we're going to want a second think or might even be preempted. I also note this interest in full disclosure, this was just handed to me, but the standard process for federal expenditure, when federal funds come in, this is usually done as something that is sent to the legislature from the governor saying, here's how I see these funds flowing. And then we as a legislature consider that and decide what to do with it. That's the typical process. So again, it kind of goes to this whole thing about, you know, are we putting the cart before the horse? And I'd still like to know how the federal strings attached are going to direct this money that may be in complete conflict with what you're doing in the bill.
Well, one of my heroes always says, we're the legislature, we get to make laws. So he's a real short little guy that I may have to talk to in an hour or two. But cart before the horse, I don't know if we're doing that, but it wouldn't be the first time if it is. I will say that I think we need to be ready. This bill has some time before it's going to hit the floor. I mean, we're not going to vote on it till Tuesday. They have to talk to Representative Rukavina to get it scheduled, and then I think it's got two or three stops after that, and then it gets back to Representative Tilty's committee. And not to start a turf war, but I'm sure there's going to be people looking at the bill before it gets to the floor. So it's slowing itself down. And Representative Gottwell.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I would just encourage members, I won't belabor this, but we have our own, it's Fiscal Analysis Department, Minnesota House of Representatives. You might want to take a look at legislative review of state agency requests to spend federal funds. And it says this paper outlines the process for legislative review of federal funds. And I don't know how much this has been taken into consideration, but these are our own policies.
Well, I think hopefully the Finance Committee will do that, and we won't. But members, I know Representative Norton has looked at the minutes and understands them. Lay it over. Can I do the minutes? Oh, I can't do the minutes yet. I'll have to lay the bill over. We've only got 3 or 4 minutes, so we're going to lay this bill over until Tuesday morning.
Excellent. And thank you so much for your time, Mr. Chair.
I'm sure that you will make yourself available to any committee member that would like to have a conversation with you. Many of us are on the higher ed committee where this will head to after it gets out of here. So thank you, Representative Kalin.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to move the minutes?
And now I'd like to have Representative Norton move the minutes.
I will indeed move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
All those, any changes or corrections? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes are passed. We are adjourned.